Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Delighted to have you with us, and we're going to have a really good show today. One of my favorite guests, Arthur Stein. He's a well-known financial planner in the Bethesda, Washington metro area, and we're going to be talking about the Thrift Savings Plan, which is something that should be of interest to everybody in government. And Arthur, we'll get into your background a little bit, but I know you worked on Capitol Hill, very important job with the what?
I was an economist on the House Ways and Means Committee.
Pretty heavy stuff. And then fascinates me, you worked in Botswana.
Yeah, I was an economist for the government of Botswana. I was a Peace Corps volunteer, but that was my job.
And then you taught in Australia at the
university
level.
Yeah, I taught at a university in Australia and then came back, and that's when I was on the Ways and Means Committee.
Right. And now you're on this show. So that
and then I'm on this show. So this is the pinnacle, Mike.
Exactly, okay.
Nothing compares to this.
But the column today is based on a talk we had about the Thrift Savings Plan and some of your suggestions. And it's prompted a number of emails from people. We've got four or five. And by the way, our telephone number here is 202-465-3080. That's 202, regular Washington area code, 465-3080, 3080. So if people have calls. Arthur, the one thing, and we'll get to these questions in a minute, but the one I wanted to ask you in the column is kind of a teaser, but it says, what is the best day to invest? And I knew you would have something.
Yeah, people worry about this a lot, and it's really not so much the best day as what it comes down to is, you know, right now the stock markets in the U.S. are at historic highs, are very close to historic highs. And the bond market is also at historic highs. You know, bond prices are just, no one's ever seen bond prices this high. And so it worries a lot of people, you know, if I'm investing now, you know, I'm going to put money in and then, you know, the market's going to go down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly with the stock market in the U.S. is overdue for a major correction, like more than 20%. Because on average, a 20% correction happens about every three and a half years. And we haven't had one for more like 5 years or 6 years at this point. So I was struck by a study that I saw. American Funds did it, and it was a very interesting study. They said if you were making an annual $5,000 investment over the last 30 years, what would be the difference in your rate of return if you invested on the worst day each year or the best day each year? And the best day was when the market bottomed for the year. So you're guaranteed that once you made your $5,000 investment, the market was going to go up for the rest of the year. And, of course, the worst day was when the market peaked during the calendar year, and that was the worst day because you knew that the market was going to decline for the rest of the year by the end of the year. And what they found was over that period of time, if you invested on the best day each year, you would have had a 9.7% average annual rate of return. And if you invested on the worst day, you would have had an 8.7% average annual rate of return.
Wow.
So, you know, what's wrong with an 8.7% rate of return? Nothing. That's a great rate of return. And that's investing on the worst day each year.
And that's opposed to timing the market and waking up at 3 a.m. and wondering what you
did. You know, I mean, past performance, no guarantee of future performance done over a long period of time, this study. But it just points to the fact that the reason stocks historically have been such a great investment vehicle was that you didn't have to time when you bought or when you sold. You just had to hold on for a long time. And, you know, if you held on long enough, you ended up with a really excellent rate of return, certainly better than bonds and certainly better than savings account or the G fund or anything like that.
Fascinating stuff, and so many people think they have a system. They know that days are cyclical or something. But let's go to some of the email questions here, and then we'll talk about general things. This one is from Patrick. He's with GSA, and he says the backstory is he's a FERS employee, 30 years service. he's going to receive the Social Security offset until age 62, and at which time I might start drawing funds from the TSP. So his question is, I'd like to know how one's account should be distributed across the various funds if they intend to retire at the end of this year, 2015, and will not draw from the TSP account for at least 3 to 5 years. And the good point there, because so many people talk about when I retire withdrawing, but as you've pointed out and others many times, particularly federal workers often retire, but they don't touch their TSP until years later, maybe in some cases it's age 70 and a half when you have to start making minimum withdrawals because they don't need it or they want to save it or something else. But anyhow.
Okay, well, you know, what I would say to Patrick, first of all, if he starts withdrawing at an early age and sounds like he will, then he should consider himself as having, you know, at least a 30-year time horizon, i.e. he's going to be making these withdrawals for about 30 years because he's going to start at, you know, in his 60s, and he could easily be alive when he's 90.
Yeah.
And in order to make that work, the big question, and this is a question that's been studied and debated quite a bit, is should your allocation be heavily weighted towards stocks or heavily weighted toward bonds? And, of course, people who invest in the L fund believe that you should have the majority, and with the L income fund, 80% of your money in the bond fund and in the G fund. But most of the academic studies indicate that you are better off to keep around 60, 70, 80% of your investments in stocks, even while you're withdrawing money. And I come down on the latter side. Mm-hmm. You know, the studies I've seen all indicate that, you know, a stock-heavy portfolio in retirement is going to generate more money based upon, again, the historical evidence over, you know, going back to, you know, the 20s. And, you know, it's the problem that I have with the L fund is they put you in the opposite situation. And, you know, for instance, the L income fund, you end up with 74% of your money in the G fund, which has the worst return of any of the five funds. Why do you want 74% of your money in the lowest performing fund?
So safe, but it does, as you pointed out before, you have to worry about inflation. We've had low inflation, but it's
when people say safe.
Yeah.
It's safe in the sense that it's less volatile.
Yeah.
It doesn't go up and down in value actually at all. It only goes, you know, up because of the interest.
Yeah.
But there's no fluctuations in the value of your principal. Well, that's one degree of safety. But more important for retirees is that their investments outperform taxes and inflation, the negative drag of taxes and inflation, so it increases your purchasing power. The G fund's not going to do that, and once you start withdrawing money, the F fund's not going to do it either. They lose ground to inflation. And stocks over long periods of time, again, historically, have outperformed, you know, taxes and inflation and increased people's purchasing power.
When we were talking about the L funds here, of course, we're talking about life cycle funds, and they are geared for when you will start drawing the money, and they go to there's the L2050, and I don't know if they're at the 2060 yet, but they're close. So and the idea is that the further out they are, the more stocks they have in them. As you age, as it gets closer to your target date, they increase the number of the G fund and the bonds. Would a solution to that, a possible solution, be for somebody who's maybe ready to retire or is retired, put it in the L fund? That would be more aggressive as far as bonds go?
I don't think that's a solution because, again, it's just moving you more and more toward an allocation that you shouldn't be in.
Okay.
And, you know, the advantage of working with financial planners and investment managers is they have the obligation to make sure your money lasts, and they're going to be helping you get into an allocation that's appropriate for that.
Okay, very good. And, Oren, do we need to take a break here? Okay, but I got a question from... I'm going to take a short break here on Federal News Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, Hi, this is Dr. Giannotto of the Giannotto Clinic, and Washingtonians have come to rely on me for age management and healthy living. And now you can listen to me live on my weekly radio show, Wellness DC, Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Please join me. I'll take your calls, I'll share cutting-edge strategies, and I'll share techniques for healthier lifestyle. So tune in on Saturday mornings, listen to Wellness DC with me, Dr. Giannotto, on 1500 a.m. and streaming live on federalnewsradio.com.
Why pay 19% credit card interest on money when you can refinance your mortgage, pay off your car note, credit cards, and student loans into a very low interest rate? Save money every month and improve your bottom line. Call New American Funding at 800-827-RATE, 800-827-7283.
Not licensed to lend in Washington, D.C., NMLS 6606, licensed by the State of Maryland Commissioner of Financial Regulations, license number 13245, licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission Bureau of Financial Institutions, license number MC3638, terms and conditions subject to change without notice. Notice, equal housing lender.
Open standards, fabric, software-defined networking, and pay-as-you-go flexibility are essential building blocks for the new IP, the modern approach to data center networking. But it's not just about technology. Forward-thinking federal agencies can achieve huge cost savings and innovation when they align IT acquisition to their core mission requirements rather than to a specific vendor or brand. For more insights about federal IT procurement, download Federal Manager Survey results at federalnewsradio.com. Search procurement. Brocade, helping government IT transition to the new IP.
If your credit card debt is out of control, if you're in over your head dealing with monthly payments, there's a powerful secret the credit card companies don't want you to know. If you have more than $5,000 in credit card debt, you have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're NetDebt, and we're offering you free information on how to virtually eliminate your credit card debt and make your monthly payment affordable. To see how much you could save, call now, 1-800-554-5166. Don't declare bankruptcy. Give us 10 minutes and we could save you thousands. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. Net debt. Live better debt-free. Find out how easy it is by calling now. For the secret the credit card companies don't want you to know, call Net Debt now and see how much money you could save for free. Call 1-800-554-5166. That's 1-800-554-5166.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Arthur Stein. He is a financial planner in the Bethesda, Washington area, very familiar with the Thrift Savings Plan, and we're always glad to have him. Got asked in today's column, I mentioned that Arthur would be our guest today, and asked people for emails, and they responded accordingly. We've got an interesting one here from Mary Leone. She says, I'm loving life since I retired at the end of July 2014, moved to Western Michigan. I did a nice amount in the I did leave a nice amount in the TSP and to invest and be able to get a monthly annuity from it. Since the G Fund has minimal growth but is super safe, to your point, Arthur, I'd like some advice from your guest today about what he feels is a good way for retirees to handle the money they've worked for years to accumulate. For example, if somebody had $100,000 in the TSP and wanted to draw out $250 to $500 per month, what would he suggest? And then she points out, yeah, everybody retires and moves south. That's why we moved north and west of D.C. Did my time in D.C., retired with 35 years and loving life. What about that?
She's got Mary Leone, I'm glad you're having a good time in retirement. I think that's great. And, you know, this is a good follow-up to the question, Mike, that we just discussed.
Yeah.
And one of the issues, there are two issues here, and one is the allocation of your investments in the TSP while you're retired and withdrawing money, which we just spoke about. And the other aspect is, you know, what Mary Leone said is that she's going to be withdrawing, has $100,000 in the TSP, and she's going to be withdrawing $250 to $500 a month. And one of the things we should point out is that $250 a month is 3% of the total amount in the TSP. And if you invest your TSP balance appropriately, that should be sustainable for a very long period of time. $500 a month is a 6% withdrawal, initial withdrawal rate. And, you know, the studies that we have are that that is very aggressive, and you could easily run out of money, you know, before 30 years are up, you know, and we're assuming I am right now. I don't know how old Mary Leone is, but I'm assuming a 30-year retirement. A 6% withdrawal rate, $500 a month on $100,000, very aggressive, may not be sustainable. But again, in terms of allocation, studies indicate that people should really have around 60% in stocks, which means the C and the S and the I fund, and 40% in bonds. And actually, bonds really doesn't even include the G fund, because the G fund is a, you know, it's more like a money market fund with an unusually high interest rate. And the F fund is really the bond fund. And again, when we get back to the L funds, the L income fund has 74% in G and 6% in F. To me, it's a very odd allocation. And then the rest, the other 20% in the C and the S and the I, you know, if me, if I were God of the TSP, I would have more like, for the L income fund, have more like 50 or 60% in the F fund, and, you know, then it's some amount in the G fund, and then the 20 or 25% in the stock funds.
So should she, A, get out of the being exclusively in the G fund and reconsider taking out at 500 a month, 6%?
Well, I can't really give advice to individuals because there's, you know, so much going on, and, you know, I get all kinds of compliance issues. But I would say that if you're taking money, a certain amount out of the G fund, you know, if you're taking out 6% a year, basically you're going to run out of money in about 17, 18 years. I mean, it's guaranteed. And that's without any adjustments for inflation. You know, once you adjust for inflation, that money is going to run out much more quickly. The G fund does not keep up with taxes and inflation. So if you have millions in the, you know, in the TSP and you're spending, you know, a very small amount, then, yeah, maybe you can afford to keep it all in the G fund because your withdrawal rate is so low, maybe 1% or 2%. But most people are not in that situation.
Okay, here's a good question from Jerry, and he says, I'm currently contributing 100% of my TSP to a regular TSP. If I'm close to retiring within 2 to 5 years and I'm in my mid-50s, would it be better for me to start a Roth TSP?
Okay, so the TSP, you now have a choice between a regular, the regular TSP, you know, the traditional TSP that we all know, and what's called a Roth TSP. And the only difference is in the taxation. The money you put in the regular TSP reduces your taxable income in the year that you put it in while you're working. And when you take the money out, everything is 100 that you take out is 100% taxable. With the Roth TSP, the money that you put in, you don't get a tax deduction. It does not reduce your taxable income. The advantage of the Roth TSP is when you take the money out, you don't pay any taxes when you take the money out. So the biggest benefit is to people who are putting money in when they're young, because then that money grows over a 20, 30-year period, and you're avoiding tax on a much larger amount of money than you originally put in and had to pay tax on. 3 to 5 years away from retirement, or I guess 2 to 5 in Jerry's case, you're not going to get as much benefit. You may not get much of any benefit, except that there's another benefit to the Roth TSP. Now, you can't get this benefit if you leave your money in the TSP when you retire. But when you retire, if you transfer your Roth TSP balance to a Roth IRA, then there are no required minimum distributions, which means you don't have to start taking funds out of the account when you reach 70 and a half.
Not ever?
Not ever.
Wow.
And that's a big advantage for a lot of people. It's not a big advantage to everybody because, mm-hmm. you know, lots of people might just, they need the money.
Yeah.
But lots of people don't, and the ability to not do that is great. So that's nice, too. To me, the easy solution is just go ahead and put the money in the Roth. You can only put new money into the Roth TSP. You cannot switch money from your existing account into the Roth TSP. And it's only the employee contributions that can go into the Roth. The 1% matching and the mm-hmm. all the federal matching funds have to go into your regular TSP. So it's not going to be a lot of money compared to your regular TSP.
5%, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I personally think it's still worth doing.
Especially if you're younger. Especially
if you're younger. And especially if you're younger, I think it's a great advantage for younger people.
Yeah. And the Roth and the regular 401k plan, one of them's pay me now, as far as the tax man goes. And the other is pay me later. And
yeah.
if you pay them now, then when later comes in, there is no tax. If you'd invested $100,000 and it had grown to $1 million, you'd have paid taxes on the $100,000, but the million is yours.
Yeah, and you avoid the tax on the million. And not only do you avoid the tax, but it doesn't count towards your taxable income that year.
Interesting. Yeah.
Which may mean that your Medicare premiums are lower and, you know, various other things you pay less on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see our producer, Lauren Larson, just handed you a bulletin. I've always wanted to say that.
Okay. So Larry from New York wants to know how the Roth IRA is taxed. Do you report at the end of the year? Well, the money that goes in is, you know, it's not a tax deduction. The money that you take out of the Roth IRA, assuming that you've had a Roth IRA for at least 5 years and you're over 59 and a half, the money you take out, it's non-taxable income, and you don't have to report it.
Okay. And the money you've put into it is part of your taxable income, and you did report that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
When you were working, the money that you put in did not reduce your taxable income that year.
Okay. Got one here from TB in the Internal Revenue Service, and his subject is searching for TSP reference documents in the link, and I think he just hit the jackpot with some of the stuff you brought in. But he says, whenever I Google for TSP intermediate advanced knowledge on the federal government's TSP and investing options, there isn't recommended great knowledge on the subject. There should be recommended strategies of how government employees can map, research our current TSP options with the real estate market. Example, C Fund equals Vanguard 500. I'm not quite sure what he means there.
Well, I would look at it this way. You know, one, we're talking about, you know, allocation, what's the best allocation. And the second thing is, you know, how do the individual funds, you know, work? What's their volatility, rate of return? And the information that's not given to you by the TSP, you can get by looking at mutual funds that invest in the same indexes. For example, the C Fund's an S&P 500 index fund, and there are lots of those, and they, you know, basically they react, and they have the same volatility and rate of return and everything else as the C Fund. The S Fund is it's called the Dow Jones U.S. Completion TSM Index.
Okay.
And there are other mutual funds that follow that. And you can look at those and get, again, information is not provided by the TSP.
And the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, I know, regularly report the daily activities of those particular funds. I'm not sure the Post does. But if you want to track it, you can see what your S fund, which is the small cap fund, and the TSP is doing by looking at those funds. And it'll roughly track it.
It will not only roughly track it, it's pretty exact.
Pretty closely, yeah. I was thinking about administrative fees and things like that. And that's one thing. Sometimes people will look at the end of the year and they'll look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, or they'll look at the Vanguard 500 fund, the 500 largest traded funds, the S&P 500, and they'll compare that to the C fund, and the one will be higher or lower than the other, and people say, somebody's fiddling with this, but that's administrative fees, isn't it, mostly?
Well, there's more than just administrative fees going on. Administrative fees is one thing. There's also money that these funds actually earn by loaning out securities, which is, and the TSP does this, and most mutual fund companies do it. And it's kind of a complicated thing to explain, but there's income they can earn by doing that. Some mutual fund companies keep part of those earnings. Others do not. The TSP does not.
Okay. You brought in some really interesting, and these are brand new, hot off. They're not even on the presses yet.
So yeah.
Numbers here about the TSPs, the rate of return through the last year, December 2014, and they're not available yet in the general scheme.
Yeah, for some
things.
Reason they haven't posted the updated 10-year returns to the TSP website. Mm-hmm. But Kim Weaver at TSP was kind enough to send me the figures that are going to be posted. And you know, I'm very interested in 10-year annual returns. And for instance, the C fund over the last 10 years averaged 7.7% a year, and the S fund averaged 9.4% a year. And I think that's more than the F fund, the bond fund, which averaged 4.9% a year. I think that's really important for people to look at, because that 10-year period, includes the years from 2007 to 2009, where we had the biggest decline in the stock market since the Great Depression. And even including those terrible down years, those terrible declines, the C and the S fund still had very good rates of return, and they outperformed the bond fund and they outperformed the G fund. I mean, the C fund return was more than double the G fund, and the S fund was like three times as much. It's important for people to keep in mind that stocks, the C and the S and the I fund, they're long-term investments. If you don't expect that money to be in there for 10 years, i.e. if you're taking it out to spend it, on something, you need to think about why you're in there.
Okay. Take a short break here. We'll be right back on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM.
Night vision, enabled by Ingenuity. Excellus improves situational awareness by delivering the world's most advanced night vision goggles. Excellus night vision also protects federal and local first responders. From image intensification to multi-sensor fusion, Excellus has you covered. Enhance your mission with the power of Ingenuity. Visit exelisinc.com/federal. That's exelisinc.com/federal. Excellus, the power of Ingenuity.
The 50th anniversary edition of the Navy League's Sea Air Space Exposition will be held April 13th through the 15th, 2015. With this expo and professional development platform, the Navy League supports maritime and naval excellence and innovation for the Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard. Want to do business with the U.S. Sea Services? Go to seaairspace.org for more information on the number one naval exposition in the United States and secure your display space now.
Commuter Connections provides free ride matching. With an EasyPass Flex, all carpools with three or more occupants can travel toll-free on the new 95 Express Lanes. Plus, through Pool Rewards, qualified commuters who currently drive alone and form or join a new carpool may receive up to $230 in cash when using the 95 Express Lanes. Qualified vanpools receive $200 per month. Some restrictions apply. Visit commuterconnections.org. The next generation of cybersecurity experts with Palo Alto Networks. Here's Rick Howard, Chief Security Officer, from a recent conversation with Steve Hoffman, Vice President of U.S. Federal.
Now that we have the ability to use the same technology we used in the old way, you know, using an app ID and current content ID and user ID, I can apply those same things now to the virtualized network, which we never had before. And we can really lock that down to this application can only talk to that application, and that's only the traffic we're going to allow inside the data center.
With an innovative approach to cybersecurity to thwart both known and unknown threats, including APTs, Palo Alto Networks provides the right solution for securing all of your network. Palo Alto Networks serves federal government customers with protection of data center operation for both north-south and east-west traffic and protection for the mobile environment. For more insights, visit paloaltonetworks.com/government. That's paloaltonetworks.com/government.
This hour of news is brought to you by Boeing, delivering the enduring capability and value of the P-8A Maritime Patrol aircraft to the United States Navy, on time and on budget.
Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community, plus daily DoD updates mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey talking with Arthur Stein. He is a certified financial planner and more in Bethesda, Maryland. Arthur, can we give your...
My website is www.arthursteinfinancial.com. That's A-R-T-H-U-R-S-T-E-I-N financial.com. And my email address is art@arthursteinfinancial.com. My office is in Bethesda, but I also have office space in Virginia where I meet with clients.
Okay, and the rules are different. That when you were talking about the returns there, the 10-year returns, the C fund was 7.7 on average. The S fund, the small cap, was 9.4% on average. And that kind of goes back to your earlier questions about the lady who moved out west, and she's got $100,000. And she wants to take out between, I think she said 3 and 5 or 2 and 5, something like that. And you said that it taking out the lesser amount, it would be a certain percentage, obviously last a long time. If she took out the higher amount, money could run out in, I think you said 16, 17
years. Yeah,
if
it were all on the G fund.
Yeah, so another argument to not be in that or the bond fund, correct?
Or the L income fund.
Yeah, okay.
Because the L income fund is 74% G fund. So, you know, it's just, it's so much less likely to increase purchasing power.
Yeah. Now, it's a sore subject with some people, but I personally know two very, very smart people who couldn't take the recession in the 2007, 2008, 2009 period. They just couldn't handle it. They'd wake up in the middle of the night drenched in sweat. And one lady who had a very large TSP account, I'm assuming, knowing her, moved it all to the G fund. And it turns out tens of thousands of other federal and postal workers, again, they couldn't handle it, and they moved it to the G fund. And bad news for them, right?
Very bad news. I mean, because typically what people did is they pulled out after the market had declined, and then they never went back in. And, you know, the C fund from the bottom of the stock market in 2009 is up 345%. And, you know, I just have a new client, and he's in exactly this position. He panicked. He pulled all his money out. He left it in the G fund and never went back in. And, you know, he lost well over $100,000 because of that decision, well over $100,000. People, you know, try and do this themselves when they actually would be better off in many cases with a good investment manager, financial planner. And it's not only because they'll help you with the emotional side,
yeah,
you know, like when you panic, You have somebody to call and talk to it, talk about. But they'll also help you with the questions like, how do we allocate the account to make sure when you're retired that you're not taking out too much money and you're not going to run out of money? And all these types of financial questions. Trying to do it on your own is very difficult. Most people don't have the expertise. They let their emotions get in the way.
I was just thinking of the old adage, a man who has acts as his own attorney has a fool for a lawyer. It's not that we're not schooled in the law, although we're not, but it's the emotional part of it.
And well, it's not only the emotional part. You're not schooled in the law either. I mean, you know, I've spent 25 years, you know, studying financial planning and investment management, and I every day I'm reading stuff and doing my own personal research and helping people directly. And I'm sorry, I think I'm going to do a better job managing your investments than you are.
Right. And again, the emotional factor too. It's not directly
the emotion.
Your money.
No, the emotional factor is huge.
Yeah.
The average person, you know, buys when stocks have already done well. They buy high and they tend to sell after the stocks go down. And so they're constantly losing money. And then they get caught up for the enthusiasm of investments like gold and various other things. And it's always after those things have done tremendously well, and they're not very good investments anyway. So their investments tend not to do well. And a good financial planner will more than pay the cost to manage your investments.
I don't know that this is true, but I read it recently somewhere, and it's one of these things about that very thing. Joseph P. Kennedy, you know, father of President Kennedy, father of Robert Kennedy, father of the dynasty, one of the wealthiest men in America, trusted Roosevelt advisor and all that. And allegedly, he got out of the market in mid-1929, crashed in October, but he got out before, allegedly because he left this building in New York, and he heard a shoeshine boy talking to a newspaper boy about their stocks or their speculations. And I've read that often enough, but as you said, by the time you and I figure it out, it's probably too late. The train
well, it's not only that, Mike. I mean, people I know, I do know some people who, like, you know, before the 87 crash, which was 23% in one day, got out, but then they never got back in. And they would have been better off just to have stayed in, taken the 23% hit, and then gotten all the future appreciation.
I've heard that from several financial planners. They had customers who got out, and one guy got out before the crash, if you will, but he never went back.
Never went back in. And, you know, from the peak of the market, you know, again, talking about the 07 to 2009 crash, the market peaked, at least the C fund peaked in October 2007. Well, if you bought on that day, you would still be up 155%.
Yeah, not bad. Not a bad return. Well, and the other thing too, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but sometimes when people say, "I made $10,000 today" or "I lost $8,000," you didn't make or lose because
only
it's
if
not
you sell.
It's not
and,
real
and
money.
Mike, I just there another thing that I want to say that's like so important for federal employees. Keep in mind that your biweekly investments are very small amounts over a very long period of time. And you don't need to be conservative with your biweekly investment. And it pains me, it depresses me when I see somebody who's been making biweekly investments in the G fund for the last 8 years. You know, and so one of the recommendations I often give to people is, okay, you've got all this money in the G fund because you say you're so nervous. If you're going to leave it there, fine, but at least for your new investments, the money that's going in every 2 weeks, it's coming out of your salary, make those into the C and the S and the I fund. You know, you're talking small amounts, and if the market goes down, you're a happy person because then you're buying even cheaper.
Real good. Thank you, Arthur Stein, for being with
Thank
us.
Thank you,
and
Mike,
we're
for having
this,
me.
Do this again. Great numbers. We're going to take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, and then we'll come back and talk with Andy Medici, senior writer with Federal Times.
WAPA is a nonprofit association that makes group term life insurance available at competitive rates to civilian federal employees, their spouses, and dependent children. WAPA's program also has flexible coverage options. For example, WAPA offers civilian federal employees coverage from $25,000 up to $750,000. And as a participating group life insurance program, WAPA is announcing a refund to members for 2014 as a result of favorable policy claims experience. WAPA's refunded over $80 million in premiums to its members over the past two decades. To learn more about WAPA and eligibility for its life insurance program, visit WAPA.org. That's WAEPA.org.
Premium refund amounts based on historical policy data as of 3/31/2014. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. The WAPA Group Term Life Program is not endorsed by the federal government. Coverage is provided by Life Insurance Company of North America and is subject to insurer approval with evidence of good health. This policy contains exclusions and benefits may reduce by age.
And now it's time for another FedGuard Factor, career essentials for federal employees.
Did you know that you can protect your paycheck for less than $1 a day? That's right. With the protection you get with FedGuard's Professional Federal Employee Liability Insurance, you can have a lawyer protect your paycheck for less than $1 a day. Now is the perfect time to assess your needs and purchase this comprehensive, affordable coverage for the peace of mind you deserve.
Learn more at FedGuard.com. That's FedGuard.com.
When it comes to security, why have so many of your neighbors chosen Ackerman Security Systems? They researched the others, and here's why they chose Ackerman. Nationally recognized UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring for just $18.95 a month. The only company with guaranteed response time. Free to switch your existing service. Experts in security for over 40 years. So start saving today and make the switch to Ackerman's $18.95 rate. And get up to 3 months free monitoring when you switch. Call 888-999-1070 or learn more at AckermanSecurity.com.
And while you can't always be home, you can stay connected anytime, anywhere with Ackerman's Total Connect. It lets you control locks, thermostats, and lighting remotely with a tap on your smartphone or tablet. So remember, switch to Ackerman Security and get 3 months free monitoring. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
The weather hasn't been too great lately, but luckily, Marvin Bond, the editor of Recreation News, has some indoor activities to help you have fun without getting wet or snowed on.
Well, if you're into horses, there's the Horse World Expo at Maryland State Fairgrounds just north of Baltimore. It takes place January 16th to 18th. They've got seminars, clinics, and even mounted demonstrations and so forth going on up there. There are all sorts of vendors, of course, for the tack and the things that you need to deal with a horse. And there's even a musical equine review. So you can see page 3 of the January Recreation News for all the details.
Anything else, Marvin?
The Camping and RV Expo takes place January 16th to 18th at the Dulles Expo Center in Chantilly, Virginia. You can check out all the top brands of RVs as well as camping equipment and visit with campground representatives from all over the region. You can find out more about all of this on page 22 of our January calendar events or, as always, at recreationnews.com.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
Attention government financial professionals. Join the Association of Government Accountants National Leadership Training Conference February 11th and 12th at the Ronald Reagan Building. The NLT sessions will help you excel as leaders in today's competitive and complex environment. Don't miss this opportunity to hear best practices, find solutions to shared challenges, network with your peers, and learn from top government financial management leaders and industry experts. Register today at agacgfm.org.
When breaking news happens, you'll know about it first with our breaking news email alert. Search alerts at federalnewsradio.com to sign up today.
Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm just talking with Arthur Stein, financial planner in the Washington area. And if you missed some or all of the show, remember, we are archived on our homepage here at federalnewsradio.com. And this is the kind of thing you might want to listen to again and again. I took copious notes while we were talking, but I'm still going to have to go back and refresh myself on some of these things. And you might pass it on to a friend, too. We're on every Wednesday, but if you can't listen at work, you can listen at home. Coming up, we're going to be talking with Andy Medici. He's a senior writer with the Federal Times, and we haven't spoken in a couple of weeks. Andy, are you with us?
It's always good to be here.
Hey, welcome home. I hope you had a good holiday.
I did. It was great. And, you know, we're right back into a really busy season.
Yeah, well, I took time off myself and did absolutely nothing. I had a to-do list, you know, dry cleaning, nothing.
Living the dream, Mike.
I guess, yeah. But when we left, things were calm and the people were getting over the shock of the elections, if that is important to you. And I remember, I remember Mitch McConnell when it was apparent that he was going to be the majority leader in January, which he now is. But he said there will not be a government shutdown. And yet, now I keep reading and hearing about at least a partial government shutdown. Is my hearing off?
No, I think you're hearing fine. I think, you know, what's going on is that Congress passed a full-year funding bill that actually only funded DHS through, you know, at the end of February. Part of that was because Republicans really wanted to debate and sort of openly discuss President Obama's immigration policies and actions. But because of that, you have an agency now that, as before, with continuing resolutions, they can't really make significant purchasing decisions. They're sort of hamstrung by that part-year resolution. And if they don't get a funding bill in place before it runs out, you know, then you will have a sort of shutdown. Although a lot of DHS employees are deemed essential, you know, they won't get paid during that, just like anyone else would during a full sort of shutdown.
So it would be one agency, department, albeit a huge one, huh?
Yeah, the Homeland Security, and there are some associated, you know, small pieces to that that are outside the department. But yeah, by and large, that's who it affects.
Well, and there again, as you point out, the when you particularly you get a place like Homeland Security, it's probably the fourth largest federal operation after the Postal Service, the VA, and it may, defense. It may be number four or five, but it's got things that I think many people still aren't accustomed to because of the reorganization. The Secret Service, which forever was traditionally a part of the Treasury Department, is now under Homeland Security, correct?
That's correct.
And other agencies that you wouldn't necessarily think of, Customs and Border Patrol, ICE, Immigration, they are now under Homeland Security. And these are, believe, you know, with the situation in the world and in Paris of late and other places, these are essential agencies.
That's correct. You know, DHS, when it was reorganized, they pulled a lot of these agencies into the new department. You know, you have Coast Guard in there as well. And it's just one of those agencies that has an outsized impact when it goes through these sorts of financial troubles.
Well, you know, I remember at the time people were talking about, this was after 9/11, and they decided to pool all these agencies together. And I remember a lot of people at the time warned about a clash of cultures. And they were particularly talking about the Secret Service, but there were some other agencies that had customs and whatnot that had traditionally been part of Treasury. They were physically, literally close to the White House. The Treasury Department is not even across the street from the White House. The Secret Service has main offices there. Now that they've been made part of Homeland Security, some people think this has contributed to some of the problems that some of these agencies have had, image and otherwise, and that and new duties, but including the problems the Secret Service has had. Have you given that any thought?
This is one of those topics that comes up from time to time, which is, you know, how many of DHS's actual problems, morale, organization, are due to just the fact that it exists now, the fact that they pulled in all these different agencies. Is the culture too much to overcome? Is the agency too large? And these are issues that Congress grapples with, that the agencies themselves grapple with, and that various DHS secretaries have tried very hard, but to no avail, to really bridge the gap. And, you know, some people say that you just need to give it more time, that DHS is still, you know, 10 years out. And that's not long in terms of the lifetime of an agency. But there are others who say that, you know, maybe it should be scaled back. Maybe you should send Secret Service back to Treasury. Maybe you should sort of reduce the size and scope of DHS and sort of return some of those other agencies to what people consider to be their proper places.
Well, I recall, I believe, the Clinton administration, when there was a very strong move afoot to merge the FBI with the DEA. And the Drug Enforcement Agency, and actually it would have been DEA going into the FBI, be part of the greater FBI, and the opponents, mostly DEA types, said this would totally change the culture, that the FBI enforces several hundred federal laws, the DEA enforces like three or four federal laws, and then they just wouldn't work, and it looked like it was going to happen for a while, but apparently
They convinced people that it would damage the DEA and its mission if they put it into the FBI.
And well, with law enforcement agencies too, you know, there are different cultures that are formed. You know, some good. You know, some people argue could be better, but at the same time, you know, DHS was originally meant to be sort of a combination of intelligence agencies, and what ended up happening is that it became sort of a large clearinghouse for sort of anything domestic security related. And I think there are people, you know, federal employees, you know, and civil servants and law enforcement officers, they work at places for a significant amount of time, and you know, there are a lot of people that still remember what it used to be like, and if they've seen sort of negative impacts, it's not gonna bode well for the future.
Yeah,
of DHS.
There are loyalties. Just a couple of minutes or seconds here, but the 3.8% pay raise, is this a non-starter?
Yeah, last time the bill it didn't pass through committee, but lawmakers introduced that they want to make a statement and sort of move the window of possible to maybe something more than 1%.
Yeah. Okay. Well, very good. Andy, what are you working on, real quick?
Well, you know, Congress, you know, it's the new Congress and there's new chairmen, and, you know, some of them are interested in civil service reform and in portions of that, at least. And that might be a lot of what takes up the oxygen this year.
Yeah. And we're hearing that if anything's hit, it might be the retirement system.
Could be the retirement system, you know, from defined benefit to defined contribution for new feds. You know, these are possibles.
Okay. Well, never a dull moment. Thank you, Andy Medici, senior writer at the Federal Times. Thanks, Lauren Larson, for working the buttons. And I hope you enjoyed the show today. Listen to it again if you have a chance. And we'll see you here next Wednesday. Have a good week.